How's your liquid death?
This one's not very good. I'm glad I thought about this. I was like, I like this one. So maybe if I don't like this one, I should try it.
You have finished this and 40 ounces of cans open right now.
And I'm still going to be the one who has to pee before any of you.
I stay hydrated.
Well.
Cold open ideas.
Have y'all had any premonitions ever?
No. I had something kind of similar on the opposite side of that once, though, where I was in high school, and at the end of the week, at the end of the school week, I was going to take a flight down to California, I think, with my family. And one of my friends in the middle of the week was like, I just had a nightmare that you died in a plane crash.
Ooh.
Now,
Jesus.
That's the kind of thing where I'm like, you should have kept that one to yourself, but I understand wanting to tell me.
Yeah.
I took the flight anyway, and I didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
I also have another plane crash premonition conspiracy theory thing that I just realized, I think, this morning. I Googled it when I was in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
We almost didn't get a whole bunch of great American television on 9/11 because Seth MacFarlane had a ticket on one of the planes, I think, that crashed into the Twin Towers.
Oh, I never heard that, this story.
And yep. He showed up late to his flight.
Yeah.
Didn't make it.
I feel like I've heard a handful of stories of that around 9/11 where people were like, I was supposed to be on that plane and I was late, or I got in traffic or something came up.
Have you had any premonitions, though?
Not really. I had this one weird moment with you, like, years ago, where we were talking about the Hunger Games movies, and you were looking at Philip Seymour Hoffman's IMDb page, and you kind of, the way that you said his, you kind of
were
like,
ah,
and I had this jolt of, what like you had figured something out that something had happened, and I was like really sort of preparing for you to tell me that Philip Seymour Hoffman had died, and then he died like 2 days later.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was really weird.
Do you remember one of our roommates, like, I was trying to get him really into the band Broadcast one afternoon when we were all hanging out?
Yeah.
And I kept playing him songs and I kept yakking about it for like, you know, like 20-30 minutes. And then I pulled up some info on them on like Last FM, and I was like, oh, like friends of hers are reporting, the lead singer are reporting that she like just died. Like, like pretty much while we were having that conversation, I was like, ooh,
oof. Yeah.
Weird bit of serendipity.
Yeah.
Scott, what about you?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. I get deja vu, but I think everybody gets deja vu. So I got nothing to share.
Have you had deja vu anytime recently?
I have deja vu all the time, and what? Things happen and I know what's going to happen next, and I specifically know what I'm going to think next. I get that like last week. Like, I was,
what was it?
I don't even remember. It's always mundane shit. It's like I'm sitting on my couch doing something and I stand up to go refill my sippy cup or something, and
get a third liquid death and open it, not finish it.
Exactly. And I, you know, I'll see that in my head. I'll be like, okay, I literally had a dream about this, and next I'm going to start thinking about this song, and then it'll be the song that comes, like, yeah, that's exactly what I remember happening. And it happens once a week.
Did you get that feeling when you opened that second can of liquid death? Because 40 seconds before you'd opened the first can,
I had a premonition that I wasn't going to like the second can. So I opened it so that I could finish it before I finished the good one. You have to finish
options.
The bad one first. Okay, so you can end on a high note. See.
Yeah. I think that's called making a decision.
Premonition, decision, tomato, tomato.
Hotel. You can
check in, but you may never check out.
Oh my God, well, there's still time.
All right, welcome to the Screaming Room, everybody, the only horror movie podcast. I did the words in the wrong order that time. The only podcast about horror movies. I am your host, Sam, and I'm here today with Ralph and Scott. Ralph and Scott, how are you?
Good.
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
The first one was Ralph, the second one was Scott, if you don't know.
If you can't tell our voices apart yet.
See, this is why I need you to introduce yourselves.
How are you, Sam?
I'm doing very well. I've had a nice Friday. I've done some gaming. I've done some research for this episode. I had a nice salad before I came to meet you guys, which I balanced out with a shot of whiskey and a Diet Coke. So I'm feeling good. If you can't tell from the episode title, dear listener, we today are continuing our rewatch of the Saw franchise. Saw franchise, oh my God. That franchise has broken me. We are continuing our rewatch of the Final Destination series. We are watching a very good film this week called Final Destination 2. But before we get into it, I have a couple of shout outs at the top of the show. We have a new subscriber this week. So we want to say thank you to Alicia for subscribing and supporting the show. Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you, Alicia.
Yay, thanks, Alicia.
And if you want to be as cool as Alicia, you can click support the show in the show notes and throw us a couple bucks. Yeah. And Alicia, just so you know, if you donate to the show, which you are doing, you can tell us what to say on air or which movies to cover, and we have to do it.
And we have to.
She's going to email us and be like, a Serbian film.
Jesus Christ.
I'm down.
Pink franchise.
I'm down. Scott's
August
down.
August Underground.
I really doubt that they are interested in those movies. In fact, I know they aren't.
And I want to say a howdy to Michael C. in Vancouver, BC, who drove across the bridge during his daily commute for a long time. That's going to play a pivotal role in the opening of Final Destination 5. So, hello, Michael C. in Vancouver, BC.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. All right. Before we get too far into this recording, should we just kick this off with the Final Destination 2 trailer?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to have both of your consent before I play the trailer.
It's like sitting in the exit row on a plane. You have to have a verbal acknowledgement.
Yeah. All right, roll that trailer.
Means death could be coming for us.
I have this
really bad feeling. It's not over yet.
Enter the AOL keyword.
AOL.com.
What a fun trailer.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So, Scott, remind me, you have seen this before, but you have not seen after this entry in the franchise, correct?
As far as I remember, yes.
Okay.
That I remembered in this than I thought I did. And okay. As soon as I started seeing the characters, I was like, oh yeah, this is how you die. Oh yeah, this is how you die. Like, it all came back to me. So it could very well be that we start number three and the same thing happens.
So during this movie,
it's a premonition.
You were having deja vu. Yes. Yeah.
I was having deja vu. Yeah.
Which literally means already seen. So I guess that does apply technically.
Sure. Yeah.
And Ralph, you've seen all of them.
Yes.
When was the last time you saw this movie?
Probably the few years ago that we were rewatching it.
I had seen it.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I saw this one in theaters because I think I was still too young. Because this is also rated R, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think I was. It was 2003. This came out. I would have been 13 or 14, maybe. So I don't think I went and saw it in theaters, but I definitely like watched it at like a sleepover or something or some.
Hell yeah.
You know, hang out after.
I think from here on forward, I definitely have seen all of them in the theaters.
Cool.
I love this movie.
Me too.
Same.
I think it has maybe the most culturally iconic opening in the entire franchise.
It is so inspired.
That's a good word for it.
Man, it just... Yeah, it's just something like we were sort of watching one of the little specials and somebody on the film was talking about the idea that like everybody gets into a car or a vehicle every day, and like car accidents are like probably one of the highest accident rates of like a vehicle. Well, I mean, maybe not, but like it's the most common.
Sure.
Form of transportation. There's people get in accidents all the
probably
time.
Probably scooter accidents.
Now. Yeah, I was gonna say scooter or maybe like motorcycle accidents can be a little bit treacherous.
Sure. But it's like, it's definitely like something that we talked a lot about during the Saw franchise is like some of the better traps like involve something that's like relatable,
mm-hmm.
like in terms of the pain or the objects involved. And I think most everyone has experienced some form of a car accident that is always very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in an airplane, like, you might feel anxious because there's a little bit of turbulence or something. But
yeah,
you don't really have, like, a little plane crash in your life experiences. I mean, although the odds of that
stuff
are going
changing. Stuff's changing right now. Seems like much higher that you will get on a piece of crap plane.
Yeah.
But
I think this movie is... there are a couple people outside of you two that I talked to about this podcast. And when I mentioned we were doing Final Destination 2, everyone was like, is that the one with the logs? Is that the one with the logs? Uh-huh. And it's like, it is, even if you haven't seen the franchise, I think you probably at least know of the log truck.
How many
car crash scene.
People's like driving habits changed after seeing this movie of like,
oh, absolutely.
Log truck on the road. I'm not behind it. I'm either going to ahead of it.
This movie is like Jaws, but for logs.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about this scene a little bit more, but before we get into that, just a couple of quick, film facts and some guessing here. We're going to do the guessing game part first, actually, before we get into facts. So the last movie had a $23 million budget and it made about $113 at the box office. Who wants to guess what the budget of this movie is? So smash hit. The last movie is a smash hit.
And you said the budget was $23
million? 23.
I would say they probably put 25 into this.
I'm going to go a little bit bigger and I'm going to say $40 million.
You had the right idea, but Scott got really close, actually. It was a little bit more than 25. They put an additional $3 million into it, so $26 million total. And then, Ralph, you're taking a crack at the box office here.
What did the last one make?
113.
I'm going to say this made 130.
130. Going up.
I'm
going
to go lower. I'm going to say 85.
Scott, you are on the ball today.
Woo!
I'm just really not good with numbers. Money doesn't make sense to me.
$90.9 million. And for the
rest. That's bullshit. Fucking losers didn't go see this movie. Come on.
I thought it was going to be higher than 100, for sure. Like, when I looked it up, I was like, there's three more movies after this, and a fourth one's coming up. It's got to be pretty solid. I mean, that is pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were all pretty shocked last week by the Rotten Tomatoes score for Final Destination 1, which was a paltry 36% on 97 reviews. And I will tell you, Scott, that because I told Ralph this before the recording, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Final Destination 2 is higher than Final Destination 1.
I'm shocked. I'm just shocked.
Are you?
Yes, I am. I don't think this is better than the first one.
I think it's pretty close.
I think it is.
It's good. I don't think it's better than the first one.
I think it's... I would probably put this on before I put on the first one, most of the time. I think the first one might be a better movie, maybe? But I think I get more enjoyment out of this film than I do the first one.
The first one is a film. This one is a movie.
There you go. So what do you think this movie got on Rotten Tomatoes off of 111 reviews?
And you said the first one got 36?
36.
And this one's higher?
Mm-hmm.
54.
65.
50. Scott is having his premonitions over here.
Mm-hmm. You guys, this has awoken something in me, this series. I'm a psychic now.
And we do have a plot summary from someone that has appeared on the show before. It is not Claudio Carvalho, but it is someone that wrote the plot summaries that we read in our episode that covers Saw 7 and Jigsaw. Ralph, do you want to do the honors on this one?
Sure.
Sight unseen, there's the plot summary.
I also
I don't know what it says.
After having a premonition that there will be a huge pileup on Route 23, Kimberly Corman tries to stop it from happening. She manages to save several people from being killed for the time being, but learns that after the first survivor is killed in a freak accident, those that she saved are still on death's list. Kimberly, along with Flight 180 survivor Clear Rivers, must find a way to save the others from death one more time. Pretty good little succinct review.
Yeah, that was actually
from
good.
From Rebecca Swain.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, that's a that's a pretty good synopsis. Mm-hmm. So, like we've already mentioned, the inciting incident of this film is this huge pileup. Apparently, it was based on a real pileup that happened in 2002, so the year before this movie came out.
Wow.
Which is maybe a little tasteless.
Yikes.
But that happened in Georgia, and it was a crash, a pileup that involved 125 cars.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it did, sadly, tragically, end up killing four people. But apparently the issue in that case was it wasn't logs. It was wintry conditions. So it was like a slick road and like thick fog.
Fog. It's so always it like, fog.
Yeah. It's just too late by the time you hit your brakes and then you skid and then, yeah.
I did
one more
see
on the pile.
This ridiculous video that recently of someone's like dash cam where there's plenty of time before they're headed towards this huge cloud of like smoke on the road. And they're going 100 miles an hour into it, and then they smash into a car. And I'm like, oh, people actually do this. They're stupid, and they just drive into the fog. They're like, this will clear. There's nothing in front of me.
Couldn't
except
be me.
50 other cars that have stopped.
I've seen Final Destination 2 too many times.
Too many times.
For me to make that mistake. Yeah, I love the little details in the opening pile up in Final Destination 2. Like, you get introduced to all of our cast of characters. we get our first big initial misdirection, which is that Kimberly is going on vacation in her Chevy Tahoe.
It's
or
like
suburban,
a suburban.
With her four friends.
Three friends, four total of them in the car.
She's the fourth.
Yeah.
When she stops them from driving onto the highway because she gets a premonition of this really cool pileup. And then in this moment of misdirection, the state trooper throws her out of the way as the truck actually does kill her three friends and the car explodes, basically. I loved that.
That was really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
After you think she's safe, she and the friends are safe, she stops, you know, all the rest of the victims behind her from the car crash. And then her three friends still end up just getting destroyed, demolished, exploded.
Yeah, I love that.
Fun.
That's something that this movie does get right. Like, it's like we've already mentioned a little bit that the tone is like really different between the first one and this one. And this movie over and over is like misdirecting you to the point that it borders on being manipulative.
They really tease us.
Yes, yeah. They do. So like we had like those three friends that die in the opening sequence, like they've got a lot of dialogue and a lot of characterization.
Yeah, we kind of like see who they are.
Yeah, and it's genuinely surprising when they get eradicated. And it's so it's such an almost exhilarating moment because it comes right on the heels of this extremely exciting car crash sequence where it's just like it's setting the movie up for success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they follow through on that like misdirection and surprise kind of goal throughout pretty much all the kills in this movie.
I would agree. I would say like the first one was more like death edging. Like it was just like, it's going to happen. It's going to, here it comes. Yeah. And this one's like, you thought that was going to happen. Ha ha. This is going to happen. Uh-huh. And it's somebody else this time. They do a better job of bringing the people that we know are going to die together so that it is kind of surprising when you realize who is actually about to perish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the people that are saved in this one are ultimately the ones that are stuck on the on-ramp behind Kimberly's Suburban, and they don't know each other, but they form kind of like, over this film a little bit, like kind of a survivors group or a temporary survivors group as they try to find a way to avoid their fate. So, of course, I mean, you know what this franchise is about. We watch them get picked off one by one for the most part. Yeah. And this movie, like when I was listening to the commentary track, which included the director, David R. Ellis, the producer, Craig Perry, and the screenwriters, Eric Bress and Jay Mackay Gruber. I probably said two of those names, right? They were talking about how in early test screenings, there was like too much dialogue in it. Like they could tell the audience was getting a little antsy in places, or they were given that direct feedback. So they cut a lot of that out because people were just like, basically like, come on, like kill some people. like we know what we're here for.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's a big advantage this movie has over the first one is like, you know, the premise,
mm-hmm.
like now it just needs to be these goofy Rube Goldberg contraptions, like fully, like you don't have to like, really do the diligence of like setting up all the rules.
Yeah,
again.
They
could
do
just
that.
Go for it.
They do it right at the beginning where they're all gathered in like the police station after the accident. And they basically are just like, oh yeah, remember Flight 180? This is what's happening now. And so everybody's just like, yep, that's what's happening.
There
we're
are
on board.
Multiple of those moments too. Cause I think even before that, there's a couple different news segments that you hear one on TV or one on the radio or both. The exposition dumps in that is just like, you can notice it really easily, but it's also pretty smart because it's like a previously on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
exactly.
You need that.
Exactly.
So you don't have to waste the time to get to the kills.
Apparently those were, I'm remembering this from IMDb trivia. Apparently those were local, like Vancouver news anchors, like
cool.
Real ones, which is fun.
Yeah.
This movie was so Pacific Northwest. I could not. watch the driving scene, any scene where they were in the car, and not be like, well, that's a road that's not far from where we live. Like, that looks exactly like driving up to, you know, XYZ place.
Yeah. And we do get, like, in terms of the exposition, I think we get a couple more investigative scenes where we're looking at someone like use Yahoo to like look up Flight 180.
The website interfaces are really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yahoo Maps, MapQuest, yeah, I think.
There's a lot of like very explicitly sponsored like Apple products throughout this.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, we've got the movie on in the background and we're getting to where Evan gets killed, and the thing that starts this sequence off, because he's just won the lottery, he's gone on a shopping spree. At the beginning of the scene, he walks in with a big like Mac, I don't know what it would be called at the
iMac.
Time.
I think it's an iMac.
There's an iMac. He has the one that has like
the handles.
Yes.
Not the handles.
It's like the half articulated sphere screen with the screen.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You get to see a big hero shot of the box yeah. as he walks into this apartment where he's basically about to die. And then we also get a scene of a very explicit scene where Tony Todd comes back as Mr. Bloodworth and explains the rules again, and then explains the new rules that were not apparent in the first film. So you can tell they did cover their bases. So when they were mentioning in the commentary that people were like, come on, like I get it. like it's still apparent to me in the final edit of Final Destination 2.
Yeah.
How did you guys like, let's kind of go through these kills a little bit. Like I just mentioned, the first Rube Goldberg variation here, is of with Evan, who won the lottery, who, comes home after a shopping spree and tries to make reheat Chinese food and fry fish sticks and try on his new ring and watch at the same time.
He's doing too many things at once. I love this
too many things.
Sequence. 'Cause when he's coming in the hallway with all his boxes of stuff, there's like children's toys just littered on the floor, and I was looking for roller skates. I was like, he's almost gonna like trip and fall and break his neck. But of course, there's all these things that the death kind of shows of like things setting into place, and we're like, oh, is it gonna be that. So yeah, he's got the frying pan going. He puts the Chinese food in the microwave. He doesn't realize that a magnet has fallen in there.
Most importantly, he ultimately, the first thing he does when he starts cooking is throw his spaghetti out of the window.
Oh, yeah. Yes. His old spaghetti out of the dirty pan, and then he just dumps a bunch of oil onto the pan.
And the oil's called something like a fire sure or something like that.
Oh, my God. I didn't even notice.
Some high fire name or something silly like that.
This is the one that was just the most anxiety-inducing for me, because this one, I think, was the longest, and this one had the most edging for me. All the other ones did end up happening pretty quickly, but this one traveled from so many different locations with so many different potentials that this one got me. And he gets his hands stuck in the garbage disposal, and that is, for me, that is like a trigger. I can't see scenes with that, or with like blenders, people with their hands in a blender. Yeah. Ugh, yeah. It's too much.
Apparently there was this shot in there where I think it's like where he's like reaching for the towel or something, where his hand is still stuck in the garbage disposal, and he like accidentally triggers the garbage disposal right as he pulls his hand out. But when they were editing it, they're like, There's too many things. Like,
yeah.
They're like, people are getting that anxiety that you're describing, Scott. Like,
yeah.
Already. Like, we don't need to put a hat on a hat.
But if the fire hadn't been going and the microwave hadn't been exploding because of
the smoke alarm
magnet and the smoke alarm.
So much noise. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to hear or tell that it was going. Like, we know, like, sticking your hand in the garbage disposal, you're already like, what if it just suddenly turns on? Like,
yeah.
That's a fear. That's enough.
Yep.
Yeah. And as that scene is starting, that's where you get one of the computer screen expositions where I think is it the detective or is it Kim is doing the Yahoo searching.
I think it's Kim.
And you find out that Alex, Devon Sawa from the first film, survived for like 3 months
after the sign
after the sign in Paris killed Carter. And then a brick fell on his head.
A brick falls on his head. Brick. That was so disappointing.
With zero further explanation, he was just in an alley and a freak accident brick fell on his head.
I thought that was really funny. I could tell that they were like, okay, like we don't need two characters that are kind of exactly where we left them in from the last movie.
Yeah.
Like, let's spend one of them.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I almost wonder if he didn't want to come back for a sequel and they just wrote it as like a kind of fuck you.
It's funny though.
You get a stupid death because you didn't come back and we wanted you for the second film.
I just kind of assumed that he died with Carter when the sign hit him at the end. But
I kind of thought that as well.
I get that because they didn't even show it and it wasn't really final. They're like, we have to clarify how he died. And
Scott
that is what
has finished his first liquid death.
Oh my God.
Just so you know. Sorry, that was...
Oh, I was just saying, that's what sent Clear Rivers into a spiral of like, I need to get out of here.
She's gone insane with avoiding death. She has committed herself to a sanatorium, and she has bleached her hair.
I was going
to
say, you know what, for all this protection that she has of like, no sharp objects, no nothing, I'm like, you're bleaching your hair, though. Like, you're still going to get your hair... Maybe that's her natural hair color, and she stopped coloring her hair. But now I'm like, yeah, you're putting toxic fumes on your head.
One of the producers in the commentary track speculates to exactly what you just said. It's kind of funny.
I was wondering why either of you even noticed that shit, or how you noticed.
It's very obvious. She has very dark hair in the first one, and suddenly she's in an insane asylum. And I'm like, oh, you're blonde. It's weird. <Yep. laughs> And it's only been like a year.
I will say, just final thoughts on the brick thing. I do think it's funny that like Carter gets killed in Paris by this big epic contraption.
Yes.
And, like, Alex just kind of gets bonked.
Yeah, Death is kind of like, hey, loser.
So it's at this point that after Evan dies, the lottery winner dies. And Kim is doing her research. She finds out where Clear Rivers is and goes to visit her in the sanatorium to get help. This is also, by the way, the same sanatorium that they filmed the opening, where they filmed the opening of Halloween Resurrection.
Oh, fun. Oh, cool. Oh, where she jumps off.
Yeah. Where she gets thrown off. Yeah. It's where one of the Laurie Strode deaths was actually put on screen. I think there's one, you just kind of get it in a line of dialogue in the Halloween franchise.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the brick thing. It's like, yeah, Laurie died in a car accident. Yeah. That's why she's
Michael
not
Myers
here.
Threw a brick at her.
So Clear initially it's like, well, this is what you're up against, even though you kind of know already, and if you're not retaining the information I'm giving to you now about Death's design, don't worry, I will decide to help you later and take you to Mr. Bloodworth, who will explain it to you again.
You dumb bitch.
The scene was so...
You're not listening.
The scene was so funny to me because they both were like incredibly like... There's a lot of animosity between them of like not
it
even knowing each other.
Interesting. They're yeah.
Like Clear is just immediately like, what the fuck do you want, bitch? I'm hiding from Death. You stupid. You set this whole thing in motion. Good luck. Like all your friends are going to die. Get away from me.
Well, don't ignore it. Recognizing those signs usually means the difference between life and death. You gotta help me.
I don't have to do anything.
But you beat it.
Take a look around. What did I beat, Kimberly? If you were smart, you'd save yourself and just forget about the others.
How can you say that? You have a responsibility.
My friends are dead. That's how I can say that. And this is what happened to Alex when I was responsible for him. Get out. Before you hurt me or yourself.
But also she didn't have the power, or she had the power to turn her away. She allowed her to come in there.
Yeah.
She did.
But like, so she immediately, like, Kim's like, I need help. And she's like, fuck you.
Yeah. It makes no sense. That, like, it doesn't make any sense. She's like, yeah, you can come and talk to me in my, like, room, but... I'm going to be mad and like really antagonistic against you the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a little bit fed up with her from the jump.
Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting that in her padded cell, she has like a video monitor.
Oh, there's a video monitor. And then her Charlie from Always Sunny mailroom yarn with pictures, conspiracy connecting.
One of them, one of them is really fun. One of the things that she has pinned up, I thought was pretty funny, or like tacked up. She doesn't have pins. Is just like a drawing of an airplane, like just to, like, remind her what an airplane looks like. And then after this sequence, like they do a pretty good job of like splitting up the kill sequences, the kill set pieces with just a little bit of exposition, a little bit of mystery solving.
Yeah,
like it. I don't think it's too heavy handed. Like I know we've kind of been clowning on the fact that they kind of explain the rules to Kimberly, who's the protagonist, like a dozen times in this.
Even though Kimberly almost like, or she kind of immediately knows what's happening, because like, we open with the TV newscast and she kind of wakes up and is watching it. And then when she's in the car, there's the radio thing that's like, it's the anniversary. So she like knows, and then she experiences that premonition. She's like, it's happening to me too.
Yeah.
So then like she has to have all these other characters explain like, this is what's happening to you. And she's like,
Yeah.
What do I do?
And aside from seeing like Ali Larter in this sequence, like I don't really need it necessarily. There's also a later scene where all of the characters in this movie realize their connection to the Flight 180 catastrophe in the first film. And in the commentary, they were debating cutting it out. And I was like, you know, I didn't really need that either. Like, I don't mind it. I'm not mad that it's in there. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a fun little morsel.
The movie's still only an hour and a half. Yeah, it's like 90 quick. Minutes. So like you can't cut that much out. Otherwise, it's not considered a movie anymore.
Yeah, it's a short film.
Yeah.
So after this sequence in the sanatorium, we get the dentist sequence with it's
Tim.
Tim Carpenter
And
his Nora. Mom.
Yeah, Nora.
Nora. Nora takes her son to the dentist, whose office is in some sort of skyscraper.
Yeah, way up there.
Like the 40th floor of a skyscraper, which also has some construction going on outside.
They're building a whole other skyscraper right next to them.
Yeah, this one has a lot of fun misdirection in it. The aquarium's malfunctioning. He gets too much laughing gas when he's having his teeth. You see his teeth getting drilled, which really made my toes curl. Yeah,
that dentist was doing more cleaning than I've ever had a dentist actually do for my teeth. It's usually the dental hygienist.
Well, yeah,
He
had one staff member who was
the secretary, the front desk, and then also, I guess, the dental hygienist assistant.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is not, you guys are, this is
he's house poor. He's spending all of his money on
windows.
On
windows, because these
new windows, because the pigeons keep breaking his fucking and windows.
Mobiles with plastic toys hanging from them.
Yes. That was the best fucking part.
I thought that setup was pretty good, because his mouth is like clamped open on the table. Then, like, the fish tank shorts an outlet, so the dentist leaves to go help the dental hygienist and the front desk person, leaving Tim alone, and a puffer fish falls off of the mobile and lands in his mouth, and he starts choking.
Yeah. And this is also, I think the levels of the laughing gas have, the oxygen increased. Is completely down, and nitrogen, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
essentially like, he's being suffocated because he's not getting any oxygen. He's only getting nitrous, but then also suffocated because his mouth is covered by a plastic.
It would be funny
fish.
If he was like trying not to laugh as he was choking. Like, he's just got so much laughing gas pumping into his fucking nose.
And they establish that he's not going to be able to move while he's on the laughing gas.
Right.
He'll be aware of what's going on, but not really able to move. Which doesn't seem to make sense to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It is funny. I think there's also a moment in this sequence where there's like an instrumental version of Rocky Mountain High playing. I think that might happen a couple times in this movie. I'd have to double check.
I was listening for Highway to Hell.
Me too. That's
what I was. It's so funny that they play Highway to Hell in this. They're going from John Denver to AC/DC.
To just,
like a very much less subtle song in terms of like noticing it come on, I guess.
I wonder if they should do, they haven't done like a train accident. I wonder if they're going to do that one maybe for the next one. They could do crazy train.
I'd take that.
Yeah.
So then we get one of the best kills in the movie. At this point, Kimberly has realized who's next. She's received a vision of pigeons flying, which is a very funny sequence.
Oh, my God.
Where she's meeting the state trooper, and then she sees a reflection in the glass of all these pigeons flying around her, and she tries to duck. And it was really funny in the commentary to hear them talk about, like, when they were shooting that, because they were like, oh, God, this could look so stupid.
Like, pretend there's some pigeons flying at you.
Yeah. And you're like really, really, no, like really scared. Like, you're like, ah! Oh! Yeah. You're basically diving off the front porch as this guy's answering the door. But the end of this dentist sequence is so good.
Oh my
God. It's one of my favorite parts. As Tim and Nora exit the skyscraper, Kimberly and the state trooper come up, and Kimberly yells, "Pigeons!"
Just pigeons. Just
the word, not like, she doesn't say "look out." Which
yeah,
is
she doesn't say "leave them alone."
Yeah,
she's like, "Don't touch the pigeons.
Don't move.
Just stay away from the pigeons.
Stop there,
pigeons."
And so Tim is like, "Hey, yeah, pigeons!" So he runs into the pigeons. The pigeons fly into a crane operator. The crane operator very unprofessionally freaks out and just starts pulling on levers on the crane, yeah, like, in a moment of panic. And then this 600-pound glass window falls directly onto Tim, and crushing his entire body in front of
wishes
his mom.
Him.
It's so good.
It's so gory.
It's very nasty. Do you know if that was practical? It looked like they used a dummy with like a bunch of water balloons inside of it.
I do know that it's practical. So they only did that shot twice. So that's the second shot.
Okay.
That's in there, because like it's a really good effect. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they really nailed it, because like as it lands on his head, like the glass is shattering, and then you just watch his body get totally liquefied and flattened to
crumpled.
The ground.
Yeah,
just gore
also
and
like kind of
flying everywhere.
Like, it's in somewhat slow motion, and the body kind of jackknifes in half. Like, his back goes backwards and breaks, like,
so,
and explodes with the glass. It's wild. Yeah.
The dummy was wired with explosives.
Okay.
Because I don't know if they changed it between the two that they used, because I do know the first one that they used, like they actually did drop a 600-pound, like, sheet of glass on this dummy.
Cool.
The sheet of glass had little explosives in it to shatter it. And then the dummy, the first time, I don't remember if they had explosives in it or not enough, because when the glass exploded and landed on it, like, it kind of worked, but like where the dummy was mounted, like after the effect kind of finished, like it, the legs didn't collapse, so they were like two little legs like sticking up. They were like, oh, we can't use that one.
Oh my God.
So they put more explosives like in the joints, as far as I could tell, as far as I can remember. And it just kind of, yeah, like what you're describing, helped it like fall to pieces. And apparently the director or whoever was like, they were reminiscing about how the day they shot that, like that footage was like on loop. Like, people were like, check this out. Like,
cool. Like, I want to see it.
Like,
see it again.
It worked.
Like, it we did worked. It.
It. I mean, aside from the opening, I think this is like my favorite piece of like gore in mm-hmm. this movie. One of my favorite kills.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so effective. It's such a great sequence.
It's so funny, because I have a hard time figuring out how old Tim is supposed to be, because he's treated like he's a fucking 6-year-old, and he kind of behaves like a 6-year-old.
That's extremely perceptive of you.
But there's a moment in the dentist's office where the dentist is looking at his teeth, and he's like, oh, Tim, does your mom know you smoke? And he's like, no. So I'm like, okay, so he's smoking cigarettes. Maybe he is a teenager. I mean, people younger than in their teens smoke cigarettes.
6-year-olds these days, they're on TikTok.
David Lynch got his first cigarette when he was like 5 or something like that.
Yeah, but that was just like having a bottle back then.
Yeah. But so that moment where he runs to the pigeons to scare them up, I'm like, this is what a child would do. But then I'm like, oh, maybe it's because he was on all of that laughing gas and he's come out and somebody's just like, pigeons, and he's just like, oh. But I still, like, I couldn't tell how old he's supposed to be.
So in the original version of the script, you said 6 years old. They mentioned that he was supposed to be 6 or 7
no
years old.
No fucking shit.
Yeah.
Did they decide not wild. To because they didn't want to have a young child?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. They could have made some tweaks. It was kind of annoying how juvenile he was when he was very clearly like a 16 to 17 year old.
I mean, he's 13.
Right? Like 13? He looks like a teenager.
He looks, yes, looks like a high school student.
And like that was something that did stand out to me like the first time. I was like, oh, I guess like the character is it, like before I watched the commentary and got that info, I was like, oh, Nora's just supposed to be a little more doting or like
coddling.
Coddling, like the classic filmic overbearing mother almost a little bit, maybe not quite that far. But I was like, man, he's really being infantilized in the way this is written. And then when I heard that he was supposed to be 7, I was like, oh, that makes total sense.
That's wild. That's funny.
I mean, I kind of wish they had stuck with it.
I know.
It's already kind of a bleak movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I love that kill. And then I think it's right after that sequence, basically where what's this trooper's name?
Burke. I kept Thomas just calling Burke. Him cop. And then I finally heard his name and I was like, the Burke cop. Yeah.
Apparently that actor and I think one other, I can't remember which other actress was also hired like right before filming started. So like this movie was set to start on a Monday, filming on a Monday in Vancouver, and they hired him on the Thursday before.
Oh, whoa.
So he like showed up like ready to go and he was like, everyone is like, okay, we know you haven't read the script yet. He's like, yeah, what am I doing? But he's really good in this.
He's
actually
great. Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone like did a good job in this one. So they meet up, Kim and Burke meet up, they get clear. And then we get our one Tony Todd scene in the movie where he explains kind of the same rules again. And then he also says only new life. I don't remember the exact wording. Only new life can defeat death.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Only new life can defeat death.
What the hell does that mean?
So they realize that Isabella, who is pregnant, who was supposed to die in the car accident, if she gives birth, everyone is going to be A-okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the new premise for this one is now we have to find Isabella and make sure she has her child so that we can all live.
Yes. Which is like, we talked about it last week with one of the original endings that Jeffrey Reddick had written for Final Destination 1 was that Clear Rivers was pregnant and death couldn't kill her because she had an innocent life in her.
Mm-hmm.
And the second she has her baby, death kills her. And I thought that was a bit of like a pro-life, like kind of annoying like ending for me. I was like, I don't know. There's something that doesn't sit quite right.
Yeah.
This ending doesn't quite lean into exactly that. It gives it another dynamic that I'm like, yeah, I kind of buy it. Like, I accept it. I think it's a little bit silly. Also, the math doesn't work out. Like, if death was supposed to take one person and he's owed a soul, but if you give him another, if now there's two souls, then he's fine. I don't know. There seems to be like a surplus of souls here. I don't know.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. Let them all die. Like, just show me the death scenes. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I did kind of like that this movie was trying to give them a clearer way out, like, because in the first movie you get that through this idea that death skips you over the second time when he tries to loop back around, and then that gets taken away from you at the end of the movie when you realize, oh, it's just going to keep coming around.
Yeah.
Death's going to keep coming around. So now you need another loophole in this movie.
Like, yeah.
Oh, fine.
Yeah,
sure. Baby. Sure. Whatever. So after we get Tony Todd ripping the nipple ring out of Evan's corpse as he talks to these three. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So gross.
Nobody appropriately reacted to that.
Oh, there's the funniest inappropriate reaction near the end of this movie. I have it like highlighted in my notes. I'm so excited to bring it up. I rewound it the first time I watched it. I was like, that's all she's giving here. It's so funny. So after this sequence, they have kind of these survivors meeting at one of their apartments where they all get together to try to plan how to survive. Kimberly gives everyone a cell phone.
And just buys a bunch of burner phones.
Yeah, she gives them all burner phones. And on the way out of the meeting, Nora, in the elevator, gets her hair sniffed by a man carrying a basket of
prosthetic arms,
artificial limbs
with hooks and
hooks attached to them. One of the hooks catches her braid. We've established that the elevator door is broken. She tries to escape. The door closes on her neck and she is decapitated.
It's great.
It's pretty good.
Loved the guy in the elevator with the basket of arms. Where he's just on the floor shrieking at this head. Because I was like, oh, yeah, you're carrying all these panicking fake arms and you're looking at a real head on the floor in front of you.
He's like, also not privy to the horrors that everybody has sort of...
No, he doesn't know what he's... No,
he
just,
he doesn't yeah, know he has on. No idea.
He just wanted to inappropriately sniff some woman's hair.
Yeah,
the elevator. There's a lot of awkward elevator behavior in this sequence.
Yeah.
The first elevator sequence.
It's pretty funny.
It's so fucking funny. The cocaine guy that's our like
Rory. He was really good in this.
Yeah, he's our comedy like refreshing sort of silly character.
Dope.
Yeah, and he's so funny in that elevator trying to like lick his fingers and get a smudge
like
off the other guy's
putting
face.
Dog poop in this random guy's face because he's like, is this dog poop on my shoe?
Shoves it right in. Smell it.
But it's not dog poop, and there wasn't anything on the guy's face. He's just fucking with him, which is hilarious.
You can kind of see it in the corner of the frame, but there is dog shit on the shoe. And is I don't mean really? Like it's actual dog shit. It was from like apparently
a Snickers bar.
No, I think they inferred in the commentary that it was like an animal wrangler was on set. And I don't think there's a dog in this movie.
What animals? The pigeons.
It was pigeons. But maybe the wrangler had their dog with them on set.
To herd the pigeons.
Like, no, that's actual dog shit. I was like, okay, fine.
Why? What?
I don't know.
So was that improvised?
Was that improvised that he just pulled his boot off and he's like, is this dog shit?
I think that was written in, and I think their dialogue is actually improvised between these two actors. They were kind of suggesting that they like had these two kind of like cut it up back and forth. So I think some of the like, I would guess like the finger licking thing. Here it is. Here's the dog shit coming up.
I guess I'm confused of the dog shit thing of like, if it was real, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It doesn't break the reality of the film for me, whether or not the dog shit is real.
It's just questionable.
No, it's just really, I liked the idea that it wasn't and he was just fucking with the guy.
Yeah. Because his face at the end after the guy leaves the elevator and he's just like, what? Come on. And he's just got this huge grin on his face.
He's just like, joshing. Like, he's just having a good time.
So after Eugene is in the elevator with Nora when she dies, he runs back to the apartment where they just had their meeting and pulls out a gun and tries to blow his brains out. All of the bullets are blanks, are duds. They're duds.
Are they duds or do they just not even go? They just don't go.
That's
like,
what a dud is.
You know,
but
what?
Like if they didn't establish that if he were to point it out, not at Eugene's head and pull the trigger, it wouldn't go. They never established that it wouldn't.
He pointed it at who's next? Kat? Is that her name? Who gets killed with the airbag thing?
Kat?
Mm-hmm. If he pointed it at her and pulled the trigger, it would probably go off. Because like at this point,
that was what I was thinking. Yeah, it was because it was death interfering and saying, Eugene, it's not your time to die yet.
Yes.
You can't shoot yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Death's being very choosy, very, very fussy with this order thing.
Because that detail clashes with something that happens later in the movie. But I do want to say that what Eugene yells out as he's about to shoot himself is, "You Reaper cocksucker!"
Yes, he does.
That's pretty funny.
Eugene, what is
this? I control my life!
What happened, Eugene?
You hear me, you Reaper cocksucker!
Calm down.
I guess this means that, I mean, at this point, if you were to just jump out a window and it wasn't your turn, you'd survive, right?
Yeah, you're invincible.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Push your face into like a running like boat propeller, like you would survive that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they should,
I guess,
do
now
that.
Now that's what they established. Or there would be something there to prevent you from doing it. Like, yeah, you went to push your face into a boat propeller and the water current picked up and pushed you away. Something like that.
You could do like the thing from The Happening where someone like lays down in front of their riding lawnmower
and shuts off right before it like
or
runs
just
over
takes
your head or something.
Sharp left the other way.
Or it explodes and the blade slices off the person's head that should have died.
Sure. So it's right after this survivors meeting scene that we get everyone in an SUV kind of connecting more threads here as they go to, I think they're going to find Isabella at the hospital, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just
wherever she is.
Her water breaks. When
they don't know that, but
they don't know that because she's been in jail. She gets pulled over in her flower van.
Yes.
They all kind of realize that they were like connected to someone from Flight 180. Burke very callously says, like, I had to scrape Billy up the pavement.
I thought of those stories, I thought Kimberly's was the weakest connection because it was just that she was watching a news story on Todd in the mall and her mom gets shot in the parking lot because she wasn't out there with her or whatever.
Oh, that one was weird.
It was so stupid because there was a couple, like Kat was on a bus, the bus that kills Terry.
Right,
and instead of the bus going to where she was going, which was, I think, a hotel that everybody died of, like a gas leak or something. There were these bigger events happening that they were on their way to.
In Death's Design.
Yeah, and then Kim was just sort of like, oh yeah, I was caught up by this news story.
And
Rory was in the hotel in Paris where the sign kills Carter.
Mm-hmm. And he decides not to go to a concert,
I guess.
I
or
think
maybe
what
like
he
that?
Says he decides where, not to go to a concert, where I'm guessing it was like
there was something that happened, some tragedy.
I'm not gonna
reference
the real one.
Yeah.
And it's funny in this moment because something that really stood out to me in this sequence is like Claire's in the car with them and she's like basically like, I know all these people, and then she says, they were my friends. And I was like, no, they weren't.
They weren't. You were a tag along. Yeah. You just decided to get your ass off that plane and follow them.
It's like, none of these people liked you.
Also, she says like, that after they've all kind of, like you said, been really callously just sort of been like, oh, yeah, Terry was like squished by that bus. I had to scrape up Billy. And she's like, those are my friends.
I guess they came around on her by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
At least a couple of them. Carter and Alex.
Yeah, the only two.
Yeah, the only two people that still liked her. So on their way to the hospital, the SUV crashes into the fairgrounds, and we get a couple of great kills here. As they crash, like a bunch of PVC pipe flies through the SUV in the back and almost kills Kat by going through her skull. Some hick kid in a Limp Bizkit t-shirt tries to help her.
This one was fun because it was they realized, hey, we're running out of time. We got to get a lot of these people out quick. And so they used one setup to eliminate.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, fully eliminate two and kind of eliminate one.
Yeah.
Eugene ends up with a punctured lung and goes to the hospital, but he doesn't die from the punctured lung.
Mm-hmm. No,
but he does. So the order of the deaths are like Kat, then Eugene. No, Kat, then Rory, then Eugene.
Yes.
Because Kat gets pinned into the car with the log.
Although that gets a little curious, I guess, here because at the end of the movie, Kimberly's also kind of realizing that she could kill herself to save everybody.
Yep.
How did that work before Eugene dies and before
The
baby's born?
She's having a premonition where she's seeing somebody driving a van, a white van, into a lake. And then she's like, oh, they're drowning. So she thinks that's the pregnant lady because she drives a white van. Mm-hmm. And then I think she figures out at some point that it's the premonition is for her. And so that she has to get in the ambulance and go and sacrifice herself, which is confusing to me with the Eugene thing, because I'm like, okay, I guess unless death like is putting this premonition in your head, you can't just kill yourself, because she literally goes and like kills herself.
Fair. That's a very fair point.
Yeah. But I mean, she's brought back, but like, I don't know.
It was her time to go though. Well, no, because the cop was still alive. He should have been before her.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah. He should have been first. Someone else should have been first, but I'm going to get to that in a second here.
Okay.
Because he dies talk first, about he gets Kat. Switched. Yes.
This one is one of my absolute favorites.
it's so good. Yeah. And it's one of the most simple ones in this entire movie, other than like Eugene like kind of having his intubation tube almost pulled out when he was in the hospital.
Because this one exactly what you think is going to happen with like one little caveat happens.
It's like the least like misdirection we get in a kill in this movie, where she's like waiting for the firefighters to bring the jaws of life because a log has pinned her legs in the vehicle. And there's this spiky like a PVC
jagged
pipe.
PVC
through the headrest.
Yeah. So she's sitting there waiting and
smoking a cigarette.
She is so fucking like cool. She's so I love her so much with
this
her fucking jar
hurt me a little bit
with that like severe haircut. I was like, oh, she better fucking work. Love her.
I think she was the other actress that was hired like in the week before they started filming.
Showed the fuck up.
She showed out. But of course, the jaws of life accidentally set off the airbag and it slams her head into the PVC pipe, which goes through her skull and kills her.
So great. It's so good.
That fucking rescue worker right before, because she's like, could you be quiet? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll put it on quiet mode.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then he rams it and then he kills her and he's just like, oh.
Yeah. But then the entire time there's been a gas leak that has been going through a PVC pipe under the car. And so her cigarette falls.
Because they even did the due diligence of like that young boy in the Olympics Bizkit shirt saying like, I don't see no gas leak under here, ma'am.
Except really the news van like shows up and just punctures the fuck out of the underside of their car backing into a rock.
Yeah.
And that finds its way into this.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Like tubing it's like pipe a system of like exposed PVC pipe that it just funnels down. And so,
like a drainage pipe or something that's been exposed. And as something like that.
Kat dies, her lit jarum rolls out of her fingers. And this was before Obama. And in the Obama era, I believe there was like a change to cigarettes that they had to like go out.
The flavored cigarettes or whatever. Okay. Or these ones, specifically the clove kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I was like trying to remember as I was rewatching it. I was like,
because there's still menthols, but the,
We'll see how long that lasts. That might go away. Anyway, her cigarette rolls into the pipe. The pipe catches on fire. The news van explodes. Is that what happens?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
I just was going to say, I love this sequence because right before what happens, the cop is walking towards Rory and there's a branch that just inexplicably falls in front of him. And so he drops to the ground, like completely flat. Mm-hmm. And then the news van explodes, which sends these posts of barbed wire
I don't know what
towards
that noise was.
Rory.
That was a warning. Scott's getting deja vu.
Oh my god.
His deja vu is getting my god. I can hear it.
Something's gonna crash into something here. But the barbed wire fence is launched towards Rory and cuts him in three or four pieces. And I just thought that was really interesting, that branch, because it brings the cop down on the ground and it goes right over him.
Warning.
Yeah, the death's like, no, not your turn yet.
Way. Yeah.
I'll have fun with you later.
Yeah.
This is for Rory.
Yeah. Rory getting cut into however many pieces was really fun.
It's so good. Like, if not for the shot of what's his name? Little Timmy getting crushed. Like, I think this is maybe the best practical effect in the movie. It certainly took a lot of time and a lot of composition of different shots to get it to work together. It just looks great.
Yeah.
It looks fucking great.
Yeah. It's really fun. Cause he also has, Rory has a moment with Kim like minutes before this happens where he's like basically giving her his keys and his wallet. He's like, if I go, you know, take this. And then he's like, will you also get rid of my porn collection and my That's drug funny. Paraphernalia so my parents won't see it? And she's kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah.
So after that, the rest of our cast, our surviving cast members, get to the hospital in time to realize that Isabella had her baby, and that's where the vision comes back of the van.
Yeah. But yeah, she like remembers back into her original premonition, and I guess maybe right before she gets plowed by that fiery like 16, 18 wheeler, she sees that Isabella was still alive.
Yeah.
And so she wasn't actually supposed to die.
On the outskirts of the accident.
Yeah, she was on the viewing it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So she wasn't, so the birth of that baby means absolutely nothing. So the entire premise of this film that we've been following and tracking toward, the goal that we've been trying to find.
Antinatalist screener.
The birth of this baby means nothing.
It means absolutely nothing to saving their lives.
You want me to go to your baby shower? No.
So then that's kind of where she's realizing she has to kill herself. And we get this really great moment here. And this is where I want to dive into Death's Order a little bit more. Eugene's hospital room, as everyone is arriving, Clear Rivers is taking point, going into the room. His oxygen is leaking. So we have another oxygen leaking.
The oxygen room with oxygen.
A spark causes the room to explode.
Yes.
Which kills Clear.
And Eugene,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot for a second. I was like, does Eugene die? Because it's more about Clear getting killed.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Eugene.
Eugene ends up being kind of an afterthought.
Yeah.
In that moment. It's pretty good. Like, there's a lot of like mix of like practical and CG in this. And like, you get this little moment of like Clear's like face burning up, and then this really great shot of this like prosthetic dummy corpse getting thrown, and it actually did hit the camera.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, it flies cool. right at the camera. It's so fun. It's so really funny.
They said in the commentary that they were very excited about that, even though it like almost like fucking broke their rig. Like, they're like, great.
The shot turned out, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I feel like Clear was just very unceremoniously gotten rid of.
Yeah,
I remember feeling disappointed.
I felt
about
she
that
needed more fanfare,
right? Like she was sort of more of the brains behind a lot of this, of just like having that experience. It seemed kind of careless of her, a little reckless, to just go to that door, like seeing that the door was blocked by that shelf, Eugene's hospital room door. She should have known, like, oh shit, there's something going on here. Death is doing something. Like, maybe I should, you know, exercise a little more caution versus going into the room. But
and also, no one got a vision of this portion of it, or like,
it was like partial, right? It's Kim has that vision of my favorite character name in this fucking movie, Dr. Clargian.
Clargian
sounds like a fucking prescription drug name.
Clargian.
For plaque 1 psoriasis.
Yes. Side effects include horrible diarrhea, rash,
fiery explosion, yeah.
Dismemberment. But she has this vision of Dr. Clargian taking a what's the cart, the like crash cart down the hall, and there's sort of this like haze, orangish red glow kind of to it, but we don't know that that's because there's been an explosion. But there were these. Like sometimes death is like, here, I'll give you the full picture of what's going to happen, and then other times it's like, I'll give you a little bit of pieces and you won't be able to figure that out until it's like happening.
Yeah. Well, I also imagine like, I always wondered like where these visions are coming from. I'm like, certainly in horror movies, like they're very willing to depict the devil and like death, but never really like God or angels. So I'm like striking that option out of my mind. I think like, I kept thinking like, maybe there's a way where like death can be very secretive about his plans, but just minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day, he's very busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like these seem to be like lapses in his time management where people are getting glimpses of what he's about to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we haven't had explained. But since part six, I think, is going to be a prequel, maybe that will happen.
Okay.
Which I don't really need it.
Yeah. No, I don't need it.
I want to see people get like, blown up and like just squished.
I'm curious to see it, see what they do with that story.
Yeah, I'm curious how they kind of would be able to kind of answer a question like that about what the source of these things are.
It could be a mess, but I don't know. I want to see an attempt. It's not necessarily needed, but I think there's some fun sort of mythos that they're kind of creating with this that could be explored.
Yeah. Oh, before we get too far, we're rounding this out now, but the funniest reaction shot in this movie occurs when Rory dies. Rory's the cokehead who gets cut in three pieces by the fence, which is about to happen in the background here. So keep an eye on this maybe for a second. But when that happens, like you watch his like arm fall off, his top half, his midsection fall off, and his legs slump to the ground. And his intestines spill out. And then you get a reverse shot to Kim, and her face is like...
unfazed.
It's nothing. It's that face she's making right now, basically. She's like, oh.
Like, oh.
And there are so many shots of her, like, throughout this movie, like, watching someone die, like, Tim getting squished. And she's like, no!
Yeah.
She has to get, like, held back.
Yeah. But, like,
she's just
she was thinking, oh god, I have to go deal with his pornography.
That's exactly what it was.
Fuck.
So Clear Rivers, jumping back ahead to where we're at, Clear Rivers and Eugene are dead. In terms of the order of death here, does death kind of compartmentalize the order in which people die based on the mass casualty event that would have killed them?
I believe so.
Because, like, that has to be true. Because if otherwise, like, Clear has been surviving for a year now. In that period of time, did no one... otherwise, no one on Earth would have died. She's supposed to be next. I gotta get this bitch.
Right? I was thinking, like, death is waiting for her to come out of the psych ward, and he finally is just like, fuck, let's give this bitch cancer. Like, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm out of ideas here.
This isn't fun anymore.
So she dies in the middle of the rotation here for our cast of Final Destination 2. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, no, she's the last to die, except for we've got one more after this.
Yes, we do have the final one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Kim kind of dies.
She technically... They introduced two loopholes in this movie. Because she, right after this, runs out of the hospital, which is... 20 yards from the edge of a lake. They did build the hospital hallway right at the edge of the lake so they could film this, because it's like, it looks so ridiculous when you think about it.
That's silly. Funny.
She jumps into an ambulance and drives it off a bridge in an attempt to kill herself by drowning, which, here's the reaction shot real quick.
Oh, she was just sort of like, oh. Like, as if it was some sort of like little added kind of detail of something like kind of interesting. She's like,
I wasn't expecting that. I keep getting psychic visions of all these deaths, but I wasn't expecting that. So she drives the ambulance off a dock and into the lake. Sheriff Burke or Trooper Burke, whatever, dives in after her and gets her out just after she dies, and she's revived by Dr. Kalargia.
And she's yelling, Clear!
Yes, that's right.
Clear!
She's getting shocked with the crash.
Every time a character would say Clear, I'm like, that's what I would think of. And then finally Clear dies, and I'm like, oh no, they're actually doing that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Clear!
You don't have the confusion anymore after she explodes. The ambulance... lake sequence was kind of interesting to hear about on the commentary, because like they do have like an ambulance that they're sinking into, like driving into the lake and mm-hmm. sinking it. And I couldn't catch if the actress AJ Cook, who plays Kimberly, was actually driving it during that, but the ambulance was on wire, so they would like lift it back out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do know that for the underwater shots that we get of like Burke trying to get the door open or the window broken as she's like sitting there looking at him, those were filmed on like a I don't know what you called a soundstage, a wet set. Mm-hmm. And she is actually down there doing that water stunt, and she's got some contacts in that make it read better on, make her eyes like more legible, visually uh-huh. legible on film. And behind her in the cab is a diver.
I was gonna say like a scuba diver with a
tank. So she was like down there doing these takes, and like she would like, she can't see anything with these contacts in, and she's like reaching back for oxygen mm-hmm. like when she needs it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good for you. Like that's scary.
Badass.
Yeah. I would never. I could not do that. That's too difficult. I would be stressed and freaking out.
It does seem really stressful.
Yeah.
That's too. Yeah. No, I would not.
I don't know how long she was down there, because something that comes up a lot, like when we get into like the nitty gritty of a lot of the movies we've talked about, especially since the Wrong Turn franchise and some of the stuff we've talked about in the Saw franchise, is that if you're doing your like complicated death sequence or some of your own stunts, like you kind of, you might end up stuck in one position for like days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I think it was a 5-day shoot for the chain to the bed sequence fight scene, fire thing, Wrong Turn. I do know from this also that the actress that played Nora, who gets her head cut off in the elevator, the production kind of felt bad for her because she had to be in that position with her head in the elevator they shot that for 2 days.
Yikes. Ooh.
Apparently, she said she had a great time.
I hope. Good for her.
Yeah, it wasn't. Great. No one got hurt, as far as I know, on this. As far as anyone's talked about or I've read about online.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, she seemed very, very sporting about this. So the movie ends after Kalarjian revives Kimberly. Death's plan is concluded. And then we get this epilogue sequence. The barbecue, the grill. Remind me, who the fuck are these people?
They're where they crashed.
It's where they crashed.
That's the kid who was helping out the Limp Bizkit kid and the family.
Yeah,
they crashed on their farm.
Mm-hmm.
They were helping. Rory saves this kid from the news van as it's like blasting in at the original crash.
That's what they've come back
to, I guess, hang out with them and have a barbecue
with the Limp Bizkit kid.
the Limp Bizkit kid and his family.
Who's manning the grill.
Mm-hmm.
I lost 2 friends on this property because of death.
And then, of course, the grill explodes. The Limp Bizkit kid's limbs. I can't believe I nailed that.
Did you? Let's play it back.
Limp Bizkit's kids limbs go sailing, and then this big his arm, his scorched
lands
in front of his mom, and she screams.
It's high camp.
It's over. Like, absolutely, it's such a good note.
So
it's so fun. It's so cheeky and so still like continuing with this kind of somewhat nihilistic kind of journey that a lot of these characters have. Like, we do have survivors in the first one, of course, but like this one is like, and we do have survivors in this one too, but it's not letting us end on just like a really like all wrapped up like everybody's fine note. It's like, nope, we're still gonna get you. There's these rules and things that if you intervene or if you're somehow wrapped up in these people in this, like, you're probably gonna get got by
you're gonna
death.
Get roped into death's plan.
Yeah
I loved the tone of this ending. Like, it like they really were kind of trying to, like, from the outset, like, make this fun and like make it a little bit less serious, even though there's a lot of like kind of course there's a lot of dark stuff that happens in this movie, but they know that people want to have fun. And even in the like test screening process, they're like, people are getting bored. We can cut some stuff out. Like even in the ambulance scene where Kimberly first gets in and she looks at all of the air fresheners. Did mm-hmm. you guys notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to guess why?
Why there's air fresheners in an ambulance?
Well, why
I can guess why.
No, but why they made a point of her being like, huh.
Well, because in the vision, they show those hanging in the...
Oh, I guess they do show
that. Yeah, like they, it's very clear that she's like, this is the van I'm supposed to be in.
Because they did cut out some scenes of her talking about, like, her visions of Isabella. She thinks they're visions of Isabella.
Right,
she's like,
right.
I can smell flowers. I smell flowers.
Oh.
So they cut out the moments where she mentions that.
Interesting.
So part of them getting that reaction shot of her looking at the air fresheners was like, oh, that's like, the real flower.
Oh, this
smell.
Is the van. Yeah.
But then they were like, we don't really need to.
I thought it was just a nice visual connection to the premonition of her seeing
that's
those.
True. It still does work on that.
Yeah.
Also, just a couple final factoids here. They had no problems with the MPAA for the rating on this. And the composer of the music is the same woman that composed for the first one, Shirley Walker.
Cool.
And she has a distinction of being the first woman, or one of the first women, to earn a solo score credit on a major Hollywood film, which was in 1981, which is kind of wild.
Would they just wait? So would they always just put someone else's name with a woman who was scoring the movie had to work with like a man?
It sounds like that's the case. Ugh, if they would hire a woman at all, they would probably
she was
right.
like
hire
the first with a single credit.
Yeah. Like, where it's like this
just
is
her name. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. She just exactly. her, not you and male counterpart person.
Mm-hmm. Male counterpart person. Yeah. Also, I thought it was funny. During the, I think the first test screening they did of this, like the people they brought in, like for the audience, like they were kind of chattering about what it could be. It sounds like they were people that were following along with like production news of what's going on in Hollywood. And apparently a lot of people were getting into this rumor that they were about to watch Dreamcatcher.
The Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that
about
movie.
The same time. They really lucked out. And apparently the audience, like the test screening audiences that like they did a Fangoria event where they test screened a movie, this movie. And like in both of those cases, people were like stoked when they found out it was Final Destination 2.
Nice.
Yeah. People were still hyped about it at the time. Yeah. Any final thoughts here on this?
I've got a couple.
Go for it.
I made a note that Kimberly, her premonitions in this were so reminiscent of That's So Raven that I couldn't help but laugh every time she had one.
I never watched it. I didn't
it was
have
she was having these That's So Raven style premonitions with the goofy ass like zoink into a premonition and then zoink right out back out of it. That I was like, okay.
Oh, I have seen clips That's So Raven. Of this. I've never seen the show, but I've definitely seen clips of that where, yeah,
Raven.
People
Simone
will edit it for her to go and like. Some they'll put something else with it, but
she
pops back.
That's the whole premise of like That's So Raven. She has premonitions, and it's just really goofy.
I didn't
when
know that was like
goes
that
in and
psychic
out of
visions were a part of that show.
Yeah, that's her thing.
I thought it was about being a high schooler
with psychic premonitions.
Cool. Cool. Wow, cool. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, but that it made me laugh every single time Kimberly had because they amped it up in this a little bit where I was like, oh my god, this is so That's So Raven.
I did. I remember my one note that I will say for our titty tally.
Ooh.
Finally, finally, we get two. That is one pair.
A full pair.
A full pair of titties at the beginning during the premonition part of the sequence of the highway.
Oh, right.
The chick on the back of the motorcycle flashes them.
Yes.
That dude with his bag of weed. Do you know how much weed I have? I'm like, it looks like a little less than an ounce, man. It looks like dirt.
It looks totally
crap. But yeah, good.
Okay,
good little
titty tally.
Flash of titties.
Good job. I completely forgot about that actually. My one last note is I'll just say the song that plays at the credits is,
oh my god,
unshazamable.
The lyrics are so funny. I was like singing it.
Someone related to someone that worked on the film did it.
That is a common thing that seems to happen.
That's come up in the Wrong Turn franchise. I think that might have happened in Final Destination. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Yeah,
that.
Interesting.
It's like, I am death and you're on my list. Oh,
I was trying to figure out. So yeah, funny. I was like, who is this? And tried to, you know, Shazam it, and it just would not. Does not compute. Cannot decipher. No idea what song this is. Don't ask again.
Well, I actually have one more factoid that I want to loop back to here, because I think it's an important one. So, the director of this film, I put it over here. That's right. I print out my notes. The director of the film, David R. Ellis, has directed such films as Homeward Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco, Cellular, Snakes on a Plane, The Final Destination, which is part 4, which is probably the worst one, and a movie called Shark Night. I just thought it was funny to throw in
I have seen Shark Night.
Okay. There we go. I thought you might.
Sharksploitation is my jam. I have seen Shark Night.
But aside from directing, most of his credits are in stunt work.
Cool.
And stunt direction, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's like a second. I think that credit for him is often like a second unit director. So he's doing the stunt direction.
Yeah.
His biggest ones were, in that capacity, we're working on The Matrix 2 and 3.
Whoa.
So,
Matrix 2.
Yes. So,
that's you're another
putting it together.
Yeah, the highway.
The highway sequence. so, in the script, apparently, when it gets to the car crash sequence, it says something like, car crash, the damage is immeasurable. And like, that's it. And they're like, David, you do your thing. And he's like, okay.
Figure it out, my friend.
Directed the shit out of that one sentence prompt.
That sequence is so fun. That's and sweet. Just, I'm curious how many cars they wrecked for it. I mean, even the like Suburban that goes spinning in the air, like you get to see the dummy arms and head
that's
out of
one of my favorite moments.
The sunroof and so cool.
Well, let's close the show out. So this is kind of a tricky one. I think doing double features when you get doing our double feature recommendations as you get further into a series get a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one's hard.
Very.
Scott, you're going first. What's your double feature pairing with Final Destination 2?
For the sheer camp of it all, I'm going to say Maximum Overdrive.
Cool.
Okay. Car stuff.
Just the scene, the very last scene of her premonition where she's pinned to the ground and that fiery 18-wheeler barrels through toward her at, you know, at her head. It just reminds me of Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
It just needed a goblin facade on front of it. Yeah, that would have been, really fun.
And Tim in this movie is seen reading Stephen King's Bag of Bones.
Oh, is that what I was trying to figure out which book it was?
Yeah. So it's
Bag of Bones.
Little Stephen King tie in there.
I meant to do that. I knew what I was doing.
Good one. Nice.
I am going to go with The Butterfly Effect.
The writer of one of the writers on this wrote that.
Amazing.
Cool.
Because they very, like, especially the scene where they're on the SUV and they're figuring out that they each were affected by Flight 180's survivors or whatever in one way or another. And Clear says something like, everything we do causes a ripple, an effect, blah, blah, blah. It affects other people. I'm like oh, yeah, like a butterfly effect. Yeah, if you, like, know, like, because there were even a couple moments in the movie where knowing what was going to happen and then, you know, them trying to prevent it, I feel like in some ways causes what's happening. Like when they run to try and save Tim and they shout pigeon and he goes and he messes up the pigeons and then he dies. Or even the trying to find Isabella in the van, they lose their tire blows out and they cause the crash that Isabella then like Yeah, they have
to run from. Aspect where, like, these people were supposed to be killed in events that would have killed the people from the first movie for the most part, except for the deputy, the state trooper who just, like, kind of, like, scraped Billy Hitchcock off the street.
I guess he wasn't really confused. I mean, he wasn't inconvenienced by anything, right? He wasn't because he had to do that. Oh, no, wait, there was. He was supposed to take another call, but his buddy took the call before, and he ended up getting, like, shot or something.
That's right.
But
that's
still, there is, like...
There's a lot of moving parts in this.
There's a lot.
My double feature choice this week is Saw 2.
Nice.
And the reason I'm picking Saw 2 is because both of these sequels make the same decision after the movies that they're following. They're like... We don't need to do some existential thing or, like, overly plot this. We know what people want, and we want to see him get killed in some fucked up contraptions. And that's what both of those movies do really well. Both this and Saw 2.
I made a note that, like, oh, this franchise experiences the same thing that the Saw franchise did. Exactly. Where the first one had a nice setup, and it was gory enough, but then the second one is like, just give us all the Rube Goldberg machines, like... Give us that. That's what we want. And they amp it up, and it's really fun.
The butts in seats. Mm-hmm. And this franchise, to my recollection, and we'll be discussing this in the coming 2 weeks. We have two more episodes in this franchise.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
They don't get too far into the lore as the franchise goes on in Final Destination compared to Saw.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Which,
like, I was noticing my notes, like... Even in the Wrong Turn franchise, like, my printed out notes are like half the length as like the ones like as near the end of the franchise when I've got like I'm shuffling around like 13 printed pages as we go through our conversation. Anyway, go back, check that franchise out on our podcast feed.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to do plugs.
Cool.
Thank you again, everybody, for listening to The Screaming Room, the only podcast about horror movies. We are very excited to continue talking. We're excited to continue discussing the Final Destination franchise for you. Next week, we're doing Final Destination 3, also known as the Roller Coaster 1.
Is it 3D? Is it Final Destination 3D?
I don't think so. I think that's 4. One of them is in 3D.
In 3D.
So next not week is going to be part 3. And then 4 and 5, we're going to do a double feature for the last episode. Thank you again for listening. And thank you to Alicia again for subscribing this week. And thank you to Michael C. in Vancouver, BC for sending us a nice little message. If you want to follow us on socials, you can find us on Twitter at The Roomcast. You can find us on Instagram at Screaming Room Pod. Or you can email us at screamingroompod@gmail.com. And as always, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Mobile. And no one has read Scott to Filth yet in a review on Apple
Podcasts. I'm too likable.
That's right.
Everybody loves me.
So if you hate Scott, leave some mean things in a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
If you love Scott, leave mean things.
Yeah. And again, you can click support the show in the show notes to donate to us. And thank you to all of our donors again this week. And until next week, may all of your destinations be final. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.